Something strange happened in the last few centuries, and it was, I've mentioned it before, several weeks ago though, one of the most evil heresies that the church has confronted in her recent history, which is called Jansenism. It's a Catholic version of Calvinistic predestination. And it resulted in two cultures, two specifically Catholic cultures, in becoming, let's just say, really morally rigorous. One of them would be generally the Irish, and the other one would be generally the French. Not quite, but they were both, the larger ecclesiastical church culture in those two societies were horribly infected by this particular heresy. And it manifested in an extreme moral rigorism coupled with a weird excessive spirituality. And when I say excessive spirituality, what I would mean is an emphasis on supernatural miracles. Not that miracles are not important, but it was almost as if you could sense in them the despair of actually coming to know God. So what they wanted to have were miraculous visions to comfort them about God's presence in their life, rather than actually just following Him. And then coincidentally, usually when a person has a crisis in conscience, they're also incredibly judgmental. You probably might know this from your own experience. I've known this about mine. When I'm having a crisis of conscience, I'm seeing my sins in other people all the time. This is a common temptation of anybody. If we're having a crisis of conscience of whatever it is, if you're always finding that other people are doing the same thing over and over again, there's probably a good chance that you're seeing yourself in them and you hate them, because it's a lot easier to hate them than to hate yourself. And this usually results in a person cutting off ties from family, cutting off ties from their church community, cutting off ties from their friends, because everybody seems to be infected with this exact same evil. Now, the reason why that Jansenism really screwed a lot of people up is also because, well, if any of you grew up in an extremely religious and strict environment, you know better than I do. But it's that weird feeling that God is the one that sends people to hell, as if He were some kind of vindictive person. But if anybody had read the scriptures through and through, there is no shortage of times where God says, "I do not wish the sinner to die, but to turn back to me and live." Jesus says it repeatedly, "It is the Father's desire that everyone come to me. And it is my desire to go to everyone." And yet, we heard this story being told from the other perspective, where God, you know, there's always those jokes. People come to the door of St. Peter and they have to go through the examination and stuff like that. But that is a completely unchristian image. What happens is that the person doesn't want to go into heaven. And that invincible chasm that we see in today's gospel that Jesus speaks about in the parable is the person's inability to change their outlook. That's the really hard part. We have to desire communion with God. If we don't like Him, if we don't like His friends, no matter of good trinkets and good food will help us enjoy heaven. It's just not possible. And so eventually, we will do just as we do on earth. I would love to be in heaven, but I'm not going to be with that guy. I would love to be in heaven, but I don't like him. I would love to be in heaven, but these people annoy me. And I'd love to be in heaven, but you know, I just don't like that type of people. And then they would turn clean round and say, "Why are you making me suffer? Why are you persecuting me?" And you can sense it in the graciousness of the words of Abraham in today's gospel, contrasted with the self-centered narcissism of the rich man. So the rich man in his life is not even willing to touch this poor man who's starving just outside his door, who's not even willing to let the most basic of human contact have an impact on him. And then the moment that the tables are turned, then he demands that Abraham treat this poor Lazarus as a slave still. Tell him to do this for me. Make him go over here and do all this stuff for me. You know, like, remember the good old days when I had paid servants and they did as I said? Well, let's go back to the good old days. And the real problem is that for any of us who have ever actually had to interact with a person like this, we all know how powerless we feel. Try to communicate to somebody locked in the coffin of their own selfishness to break out, and nothing happens. Nothing. And there's nothing you can do. You can beat your head against an ambo, you can beat your head against the wall, but eventually they have to learn it for themselves. And this principle is not exclusive to Christianity. You can find it in Aristotle's Ethics, you can find it in the principles of Confucius, you can find it in the works of Lao Tzu, you can find it, well, pretty much everywhere. Everywhere where you had a certain moral insight, the philosophers and the religions all have this kind of teaching that you can't be good by just following moral observances. That the good actions that you do have to transform your inmost heart. And then gradually, to know the good means to understand what it means to be the good person. Confucius calls him the Junzu. Aristotle calls him the virtuous man. The person who embodies virtue in themselves and then communicates it. For the Christians and for the Jewish people, that this person has been made in the image and likeness of God and therefore communicates that splendor to other people because they have willingly opened themselves up to it. And this helps us understand the mystery of the saints, is that even when it appears that they're slightly immoral, because there's never been a time when a saint was entirely accepted, they all still kind of give the impression to their contemporaries that they have a greater insight into the heart of God than everyone else does. And that's why they're always kind of skirting that line between good and evil. Because they're always trying to just go one little bit further. Now, in this Lenten season, we are teaching ourselves to do unpleasant things. And we are consciously choosing to do something that we consider to be unpleasant. And that's practice. It's meant to be practice. So when we are training our hearts, we are training ourselves to realize, okay, I'm doing something that's not morally necessary. You always have to give up sin for Lent. Every Lent, every day, all of your life, giving, like, a sin is not something for Lent. Sin, Lent is something, a good thing you choose not to do. And so when we're disciplining ourselves, we feel it in our bones when we want to do what we want to do. And we feel our entire being saying, chocolate. We know the pain, we know the frustration, but then how much more when we realize that that's even what our body does when it's telling us to do something we know is wrong. The more we resist our personality and who we are that is inclined to do bad things, we will discover the weird and terrifying paradox about our humanity, which is that we often want to do bad things even when we know what the good is. That's a real head turner. And yet it's real. And it helps us understand why some of the most vicious tyrants in history have convinced themselves they were working for righteousness and for justice. That the inquisitor who torments, that the tyrant who tortures, or anybody that does anything that is horribly evil, like the Jansenist, can go home and sleep at night and go, "Aren't I a good boy?" The only thing that would destroy a person like that is the realization that God never wanted that. And you can see why the rich man is so desperate to cling to his own sense of purpose. It's not because God punishes rich people and praises poor people. It's not so simplistic as that. It shows us that we need that interior transformation that our enemy in our spiritual life is not all the people around us. It's not all of our grand persecutors who are making our life miserable. It's not government figures. It's not bishops that are not allowing us to do what we want to do. It may not even be the evil machinations of the local parish priest. Our real obstacle is ourselves. But the fortunate thing about the church is that the more we know this, the more we know we struggle together. It helps us be patient with another person when they inappropriately snap at us and say something just a little bit too cruel. It helps us be patient with people when we understand that if I can struggle to just be basically decent, then I should be at least basically decent in forgiving the other person for being not so decent. That this experience of, I don't want to call it our own wretchedness, but let's just call it our own conflictedness, is what makes us gentle. If we try to force ourselves to be gentle, we'll just be condescending. If we try to make ourselves be moral, then we'll be like the Jansenists. But if we open ourselves to God, then that interior transformation begins to work. Because how on earth would we actually know what our horizon is if our horizon is God? Lazarus has been set free. The rich man is imprisoned in himself. So the only way that we can undergo the true freedom that sets us free from enslavement to ourselves is to undergo the Passover of Christ's cross.